Couple of quick plugs before we start today's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is @NarbosPodcast. If you want to email us, our email address is narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments on future episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. And if you want to be on a future episode, let us know as well, and we'll try to set something up. You can also follow our show on all of the podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So please give us a follow and subscribe on any of those sites, and you will be able to get us pushed to you every single week. The theme music for this show is brought to you by a band called Ew, You're a Girl and Girls Suck. They are a punk band from here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And their Bandcamp page is iagags.bandcamp.com. That's iagags.bandcamp.com. They used to watch Degrassi episodes when they took breaks from recording back in the 90s. Anyways, that's about it for the plugs. Let's get to this week's episode.
That's right. It's not Night Court, but it's Day Court. Hello, everyone. You're welcome to Narbos and Broomhead's show again. And we're going to talk about court today. And it's going to be very, very exciting. And it's going to be so lovely and good. And we have all kinds of people in the gallery. We have lawyers. We got judges. We got the whole shebang. So let's say who is here. Let's fire it down to O-Town. Who is that classic representative that we have there? Who could it be in Canada's capital? Not Toronto, Ottawa. Who could it be?
I think it's me?
Yeah.
Good job. Do I live in Ottawa?
Do I? Mm-hmm. Do I? Mm-hmm. Yes, it's me. I'm a judge in Ottawa. I'm very busy, but I'm here tonight just for you, fine people.
Uh-huh. Go on.
I think I should stop now. Ottawa had a beautiful day today, finally. Make you all jealous. It was 18 degrees. Hoo-hoo.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. Thanks, carbon tax.
Yeah. Also, I'll just throw in, I'm Ted, by the way. So, yeah, it's fine. It's a nice day, 18 degrees. So that's not like freezing for all our American friends. Fahrenheit. Stop using Fahrenheit. It's weird.
That's 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
I don't think it is.
Who could that be?
No, it is not.
Who is our meteorologist out west?
That's me. It's Arlo in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. Normally, I would probably have no idea that 18 degrees was not 100 degrees, but Fahrenheit. But I do live with an American, so I do have to do the conversion sometimes. So pretty sure that that's not the case. It is 64 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ooh. Wish it was 5 degrees warmer. Just saying.
Ew.
Get it?
I hear the dull set tones of sloop.
Oh, hi.
It's over there.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alan. I'm in Toronto. I'm also known as Slip, apparently. And actually, I am, because that's the name I gave myself a long time ago. Anyways, I don't have anything else to say. Let's go over to Newfoundland. Ted. No, you're the host, Barry.
We're the same person, remember?
Yeah, Ted Barry. Ted Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Real.
Hey, hey. There you go.
Yeah. I had queued up for about 2 minutes, so I'm glad it worked. So I wasn't sure if I had the timing right. So, yeah, Barry, looking forward to this one. Good stuff.
Wow. All right.
Poor Rachel. I did a. It was all about the sound effect. That's all I had ready to go. So. Now we're going to go from there.
I get another sound effect. That's our favorite Billy from several episodes ago.
Fuck. Fucking dork.
Yahoo. I remember it well many times. Also, everybody, Linda just went outside. She went out to pee, so I might have to go and tell you that I'm going, and you'll have to talk amongst yourselves. But when she barks, I got to go let her in.
Okay.
But anyway, she's...
No, I say, I remember we'd be doing like the online trivia, and Ted goes, oh, I got to go now for 2 minutes. Yeah. You keep everybody busy. I'm like, ah.
And Barry, you were like Garth on Wayne's World. You're like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do.
I like to play. I tell him the riff and spritz, and then he just, for 2 minutes straight, he just complained about I was leaving him abandoned. He's all right. He made it. He lived through it.
That's right.
He's a better man for it. All right. What do you kids think? Shall we jump into this this here episode?
Oh, please.
Ooh. So what we're going to talk about today is the episode Connie Goes to Court. And it was produced and directed by one Linda Schuyler and Kit Hood, written by Michel Dion. Not related probably to Marcel Dion. Didn't he play for the Los Angeles Kings?
He did. Yeah.
Look at me, sports guy.
Yeah, him and the Detroit Red Wings. And he was one of the leading scorers, like the top 10 leading scorers in NHL history. And as I've said many times on this podcast, was at Zeller signing autographs and no one was lined up to see him. So
that makes me so sad.
At Zeller's in Winnipeg. He just sat there at like the, you know, like the kind of table that they pull out in wrestling to break. They just put a table out like that and a plastic chair, and Marcel Dion sat there for at Zeller's.
He's like, mortifying. I want to put myself through this table.
And people walked up to him and he's like, would you like an autograph? And they're like, can you just tell me where the restaurant is, please?
Can you tell me where the can is? I gotta go. My kids gotta go.
I gotta take a wicked shit, Marcel.
Yeah. They should have put him in the restaurant as a chef.
That would have been
Marcel
great.
Burgers.
Yeah.
Marcel. Oh, he'd be shooting the burgers across like with like a hockey stick, like and putting them in people's burgers. Like they'd open the bun and shoot it across the restaurant.
Yeah, like when Happy Gilmore golfed the Subway into the guy's mouth, and then he's like, talk about a hole in one. That's what Marcel Dion could have done with burgers and this hockey stick to me. Yeah.
Oh, what could it be?
Say in French.
Yeah. Le but, le but, oui, oui. All right.
Yeah. So this one was released on January 11th, 1985. Good year for music. 84 to 86, fantastic years for music. Got the Replacements.
Why do you say that?
Many, many different things. Just
like
is.
What else?
Back to the Future.
That's not music.
Yeah.
No, but.
Idiot.
Great soundtrack.
What are you
power, love,
wow.
What? I so wanted to be Marty McFly holding on the back of that Jeep, waving to all the ladies who are working out in the exercise in the gym.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. A young kid is like.
Did you get a boner?
I was a little boy. So,
oh, a little baby.
No,
of course.
It wasn't meant to be. Just, I don't know. Moving on from quote, baby boners. All right. Sorry. So we're jumping in. Let's do it. So the bell rings and the kids are changing classes. Casey is checking kids off. Who is Casey? Is Susie, I guess, in the future episodes in junior high. And she's checking kids off a list and taking their money. Pete's sitting there in the class and this change of classes. Right off the jump, he's negging her, I believe. With a shake of his head saying, so unorganized. So if I
Shut
was a kid.
Pete.
Oh, yeah. It, like, terrible. Like, I'd $1 million man him and take a dollar bill and shove it in his mouth if I was Casey.
Which you could still do in 1985 in Canada, because at that time we still had $1 bills. So.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I gotta let Linda in. Can you just give me 2 seconds?
Nowadays, to $1 million man, somebody in Canada, you have to flick loonies at his nutsack. That's how we do it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's how they do it.
And Virgil's dead, so he can't protect them
anymore. Oh, yeah. R.I.P. in peace. Virgil, a.k.a. Vincent, wrestling superstar.
Yeah.
Superstar. Right.
Number one at the gimmick tables.
So Casey asks Connie if she's got the money because they're collecting for Miss Gonzalez's baby party because she's quite pregnant. Connie can't chip in because she hasn't gotten paid for her paper route yet. And Miss G comes in the classroom. So they hide the money. It's kind of like when the screws try to flip over the cells at the jailhouse and they're doing a search for contraband and they're like, put it away, put it away. And Casey warns Connie to pay up, and no excuses this time.
I love how we're already sowing the seeds for, like, kids in Degrassi just being rich and having their own disposable income. Like,
oh, absolutely.
The expectation here isn't just that, like, number one, there's an expectation that every child is going to pitch in for this party. Number two is these children and the money that they're going to pitch in with is their money. Like, it's not, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
they're not asking their parents for it.
No.
It is
hell?
Their own money.
Yeah. So they need to earn it, these 11-year-olds, at their jobs that they have. So.
Yeah. Hey, man. What is this, a birthday party? Give somebody $5?
Yeah.
Also, if a young Ted gets a hands on his $5, I'm buying a G.I. Joe Crockmaster. You can guarantee it. I've said that before. It's true. Like, that's the ultimate. So cool.
$5, well, again. So... $15, Arlo? Yeah, $15 in today's money.
$15?
Yeah, that's what that $5. $5 in 1985? Like, if you were a kid, if you were 11 and someone gave you a $5 bill in 1985, yeah, Ted, you'd be like, off to Eaton's to buy a fucking G.I. Joe.
So. Off to the Lamborghini Mall.
That's right. The Lamborghini Mall.
Yeah.
That's famous. Right where I'd go.
Famous mall, everybody, in Canada, just so you knew. The Lamborghini Mall.
Excuse me,
$5
mother.
$5 Lamborghinis.
Please escort me.
$15 in 1985. $15 in 1985. This inflation calculator says $36.88.
No, it's $5. We're not giving $5. We're doing
$5. Sorry, that's $15 though. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
We're looking at $5, right?
Yes.
$12 and
29 cents. Ooh, okay.
How much?
$12 and 29 cents.
Holy moly, gee. That's crazy.
That's a lot for, like, a small child.
Yeah, like, you better be getting a fucking A in that class to be giving that teacher fucking $12.
Well, and reminder that Mrs. Gonzalez, who's very pregnant in this episode, comically
14 months pregnant, I noticed.
Yeah, yeah. Played by one Wendy Watson, wife of Lewis Mann, and... fellow composer.
She's like, children, before I go off to have this child, let me sing you one of the shitty songs I wrote. Here we go.
So is she as I say in wrestling, is she shoot pregnant? Like, is she for real pregnant? Do you know?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, that's she's rude not. To ask a woman if she's pregnant, Ted.
It's true, Ted.
He's fucking humongous. Ooh. She's like huge. She don't got couch pillows under that dress. She got a couch.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I wish I had you around during pregnancy. I could use a little tugboat.
She's hitting kids in the head, like with her stomach as she walks up the row.
Wish
she's
I'd,
like, ah.
Makes me want to learn the tuba. I could walk behind her.
We're in band. So we see a crumpled up Finn drop to the floor, unbeknownst to Casey, who's collecting the money. And they're going to do a Shakespeare play, The Merchant of Venice, to big groans from class. Our artist of the group, the play, the person.
The Bill Cosby.
Who
there?
Do you think I may be referring to? The person, the world is a stage upon which I will play. Arlo, what do you know about The Merchant of Venice?
I don't know a lot about The Merchant of Venice. I know that sixth graders probably shouldn't be learning this play.
No.
It has, like, anti-Semitic themes.
Oh, no.
so
great.
I mean, I don't like. I don't think we did anything to do with Shakespeare when we were in elementary school that I can remember.
Absolutely not.
And, no.
I feel like if you did, you should go with something. I mean, it is a comedy, but maybe something that has slightly less.
We were watching the Chronicles of Narnia movies. In grade
6. We're watching Transformers in grade 6.
The only thing I remember about my time in grade 6 was when I got kicked out of class for farting. So that's...
You fart in a lot of places.
I sure do.
Always with the farting.
Yeah, I got a checklist all the places I farted. So.
So Connie hands Casey the foul money, and Casey still gives her the gears, saying that she knew she was stalling, and everyone knows. And then drops a Trumpian like, everyone knows you're always making excuses. It's like, okay, shut up. Casey hushes up Connie's perceived excuses and ticks Connie's name off the list anyway and just goes, okay, you gave me the money. Mrs. G says that they're going to talk about justice and mercy. And here comes the title graphic. Connie goes to court.
Oh, boy.
Is Connie short for anything? Or do you just name your baby Connie?
Again, gender ambiguity here. I was watching this with my husband, and he was like, is that supposed to be a girl or a boy? And I was like, well, because I know that she becomes Trish, right? So I know that she's female presenting for the most part. So I knew that she was supposed to be a girl, but it could be Constance or it could be Conrad.
I'm reading here. Oh, true. Connie is a given name. It is often a pet form of Conchetta, Constance, Cornelia, Cornelius, or Connor, Conrad, Constanza.
Constanza?
Conception. so, you know, you could. I do call it Connie Bay sometimes when you want to shorten it over there in Newfoundland, everybody. Consuela, Consuelo, or Connor, which I don't know why you would shorten Connor with Connie. It's about the same length, but anyways, there you go.
Well, Condolingus. All right.
Uh-huh.
Internet lied to me.
I just will say, like, on this show, because they're kids, right? So, you know, they're unless their clothes are particularly gendered or whatnot, you know, they're not generally wearing makeup, and the 80s haircuts are very gender neutral. It's kind of hard to tell, you know, if their voices haven't changed. Like, it's kind of difficult. Which is kind of nice. It's like kind of ahead of its time in that way. I don't think that was their intention at the time, but it's kind of nice that it could be in every child.
So we're at a newspaper drop-off in like a playground, and Moose is telling the papers, and Martin is talking about the union going on strike. And Connie comes up, she rolls up, inquires what's going on, and Martin chastises her and says, don't you ever read the news, which is like super rich coming from Martin Degrassi's dumbest kid.
Like, Martin can't read, everybody. Like, he's the, yeah.
Don't you know?
But I do like that fucking, the idea. Like, I would like to see a 5-minute scene of Moose and Martin just talking about current affairs in like 1985. Like, so what do you think? You think we're going to get free trade? Moose, you're in Canada? Because Mulroney's talking about it. I don't know.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's right. Things are sketch.
And Martin's like, I don't like school. I want to get out. So
Moose loads up Connie's little red wagon or little radio flyer with newspapers, and off she goes. Connie then does her paper rounds. We have a little bit of montage. Then back at home, Connie's mom, I have this noted, oops, I mean Sister Liz, because she came in and she had the apron on and stuff, and I was like writing these notes going, that must be Connie's mom. Nope, it's her sister.
Yeah.
Hands her some carrot cake, which she says but then she hates carrots. Like, she says, here's She gives it to her, but then she's like, oh, I hate carrots. And Liz utters the line that has been the most said in many households grow up. You liked it before I told you. With I was like, oh, that cuts to the bone.
I mean, that's what happened.
I felt that before.
Yeah, Connie starts eating the cake and says it's delicious. And then she's told it's carrot cake and is like, ooh, I don't like carrots. Very, very childlike.
Yes, fantastic.
Yeah.
The truth, she's bitter. they talk about Mrs. G's party and the play. Liz starts to recite the lines she remembers from when she did it back when she was in school. But Connie interrupts and says, I need $5.
I would too. Like, I don't want to fucking hear this play in my house. Shut up.
Oh, yeah.
What are you?
That shit at school.
You fucking nerd. Shut up and give me money.
She says she needs it because she kind of borrowed money already. And the wise sage Liz is, she says, that's a good way to lose friends. And I'm like, even now, I'm kind of like, yeah, it's totally a good way to lose friends. Don't owe people money. Liz says, why doesn't she use her paper route money? She still owes for watercolors that she left outside and ruined Liz's watercolors. Connie says it's not her fault. And Liz reminds her, it's never your fault.
So we're laying the groundwork here that Connie is not good with money, always kind of chasing money around, always needing to borrow money, and also like not trustworthy, right? Like doesn't do what she says. So,
and does not own up to her mistakes.
Yes.
AKA an 11-year-old kid.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Like, you irresponsible little fuck. Like, it's a child, everybody. So,
yeah. That's right. So in class, justice and mercy, the words are written on the chalkboard. Homework. The homework that Miss G gives is study the quality of mercy. I'm like, what the fuck is this, like a fourth year university course?
It's like philosophy.
Just dive head into that. The quality of mercy. It's like, yeah, damn.
Even worse, you can't just Google it in 1985. Like, you'd actually have to go to a library and find fucking books and encyclopedias. Like, the worst assignment. I would drop out of school.
Yeah. Like, I can't read most of these words.
Yeah.
And I can't even give a percentage because I'm a kid and I don't know percentages yet. Like, what's going on?
And not only that, the teacher writes those words on the chalkboard, and then as soon as she finishes, the bell rings. Like, wouldn't that be something you'd start the class with? that's the ender?
Like, I'm pregnant. I don't care. I'm going to sub whoever's coming in behind me.
I got to piss every 5 minutes. Fuck it. Like...
Yeah. There's a human being eating off of me. Like, you kids don't know. She's doing this big rant. So we get more groans from class. Judy and Pete. Actually, Judy. So I think we're introduced to Judy here, who
we've seen her before.
Okay. Yes. Yes. So
again, the gender ambiguity here.
Oh, I did the whole episode, and I was like, oh, Judy's a Judy, not a boy. I, like, innocently just said, oh.
I was the same. I wrote him and the judge and blah, blah, because I didn't realize what their name was until they were in court later, and it was like, yes, ma'am. And I was like, are you joking, or is that? And then I had to change all of the pronouns in my notes, so... Yes.
I literally had to go in and look up replace in my Word document and replace because first I thought it was a boy and I was calling him a little berries and cream dandy because if it was a boy, he had a nice little bowl haircut. I'm like, ooh, berries and cream, like that type of thing. And so I had to change that and then just change it to Judy. So, yeah.
I like the idea that you wrote berries and cream dandy like 40 times in your notes.
I wrote it in different ways. So Judy and Peter discussing what to get for Miss G for her shower or whatever. Pete figures it should be for her, not some dumb baby who doesn't even have a name yet. It's like, oh, I know which side you'd be on for the abortion debate about the time of conception. Yeah. which it's fun. I agree with. So Casey is doing accounting and realizes that she's $5 short. The camera focuses in on Connie as she makes a break for the door of the classroom. Pete says, Casey could have made a mistake, and she retorts that I may be organized, but I'm not stupid. And I'm like, okay, hold on, Casey. Like, just because you're, you know, you may be miscalculated, you don't have to be stupid. they have money for everything except the cake. Connie's almost out. She's almost out the door. Almost. But when Judy says, it'll turn up sooner or later, Connie, you're almost at the freaking door.
Oh.
Turns and says, at the latest, you were almost out.
Yeah, she's
Casey
like...
asks, what makes you so sure? Connie says, I just know. And then Casey recounts some money. It's like, why didn't Connie, you just keep going?
Yeah, I just know you the didn't... money will show up. Don't worry. It's like, oh, go. Oh, dummy. Yeah.
So how many kids do we think are in this class? Like 20?
Sure. So are you adding up the money?
Yeah, like $10,000 for Mrs. Gonzalez's baby.
You're like, Mrs. Gonzalez, we got you a cake and a car. So
and a Lamborghini at the Lamborghini store.
You know, like they're just like, well, we have money for everything but a cake. I'm like, what are your other expenses?
Yes.
Like what they have like $100?
What are your overheads?
Like every kid gives $5? Like, so they have $100, so that's $245.87.
I would like to argue that in 1985, $5 will probably get you a cake. And in fact, like they're like, we can get every single thing except for the cake. And it's like, you can't rearrange your finances. Like, we have $100 in our budget. We only collected $95. We're fucked. It's like, I think you can make it work.
Like, what are you getting? Like, you're getting her like a gift worth $200? Like, what the fuck?
Like,
you buying her a baby on the black market, like another baby?
They're like, now we can't get a cake. One of us is just gonna have to shit in a pan, and we're gonna have to eat that.
Anyway.
Even Martin's like, that's a bad idea. He's like, I'm the dumbest kid in Degrassi. So Connie shows up with her papers, her newspapers, but Moose breaks it to her that the strike is on, and there's a printer's union on strike sign on the fence. And she Connie's pissed because she needs that money to pay back some bad people, who is Casey.
I love how, like, the children who are delivering the newspapers are, like, somehow, like, tuned into the union. like, they're not in the union, I get it, but they're like, you know, Moose is like, union's been on strike, we're down on our luck. So, that came out in 1985, did it not? Anyways. The first of a number of occasions where we walk in on children playing chess, and I don't know where this came from, but all of a sudden in this episode, children pass the time by playing chess, and Martin playing chess, get the fuck out of here.
Me stupid.
He's playing like checkers. He's using pieces like checkers.
Like Moose, I could see fucking being a chess champion, but Martin, no way.
We used to play checkers. I mean, not very well, but we had a checkerboard when I was a kid and used to play chess and checkers. So, suck it.
Also, Moose Moose doesn't just... Like, Moose isn't just like, yeah, they're not going to put papers out because people aren't working, which is what a child would say. Moose is like, the press operators have voted 90% to strike.
I find it interesting they go to such great lengths to try to explain court to us in this episode in, you know, lamest terms kind of thing that kids can understand, but it's just like unions. They're just like, yeah, we'll just throw that in there with no explanation for the kids. It's fine.
Yeah, so a child watching this is like, oh, fuck the union. Yeah, she can't get the money. Union's on strike. You know, collective bargaining, children.
Duh.
Since you mentioned that, I'll be like, it beats like a drum all night. I've been thinking about that. Because is that Bon Jovi? Is that the I Was Made for Loving You, Baby?
Living on a Prayer, isn't it?
We got to talk about that for a sidebar. Oh, that actually fits because it's a court thing. Sidebar, what Bon Jovi song is that that you're referring to? The Union's on Strike.
Living on a Prayer, dude.
Is that Living on?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Sing that part. Sing that part.
Do you not know this song?
Johnny used to work.
Yes, of course, but I'm getting it mixed up with.
It's like
I'm getting it mixed up with many Bon Jovi songs. I'm thinking New Jersey, 1988, when he wore the trench coat with Jason's mask on the back.
Oh, you know. Oh, we're halfway there. Oh, we're living on a prayer. You know his most famous song.
Yeah. But sing the line with the Union's on strike. I can't fit it.
Go back, rewind the podcast 5 minutes, everybody.
No,
and
no.
Hear me sing it.
You didn't sing it.
That's what I sang 5 minutes ago.
Oh, come on.
That's why you're thinking
what
about
is happening?
It.
Is this Back to the Future?
Beats like a drum. Oh, man. So now I'm thinking about us. Yeah, with you, baby.
No, it's not I Was Made for Loving You, Baby. That song was like the 70s. Yeah, it's
my
Kiss.
My Kiss, yeah. Kiss.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Do you have a music podcast, Alan?
Yeah. Well, I gotta go revisit my Bon Jovi catalog after this podcast is over.
Fun fact about me, Slippery When Wet, first cassette I ever owned.
Ooh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Too.
Yep.
Mine was Cherry Pie by Warren.
Yeah.
She's my cherry pie. It's like, oh, he means something else. I'm a kid. Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it.
Like a Virgin by Madonna.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh.
So far, Barry? my album, the most appropriate of the album so far. Barry, you're first.
Weird Al Yankovic, Even More.
Yes!
That is probably the coolest.
Ted.
Mm.
Here you go.
Oh, yeah. Dude, this is tough.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. I just needed the groove.
And now we're getting sued by Bon Jovi.
Yes. By the way, I need to know, Courtney, your first tape.
I don't remember.
Oh, come on.
It was probably something stupid. Like I think it was the Mighty Ducks soundtrack or something.
Oh, yes.
I'm fucking serious. Embarrassing. I like that Zamboni song.
Can you sing a few bars? Break us off a few bars?
I want to drive the Zamboni.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, that's good.
My first CD was the I got it at Costco. It was like one of those fake dance mixes where none of the songs are sung by the people.
Oh, yes. Yes.
No. That's awesome.
I specifically on my first CD, Bad Out of Hell.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
all timer.
Look at you, cool guy.
Did you watch the Spice World movie just because Meatloaf was in it?
No, I did not know he was in it. I did. Oh. He was in the Land of a Thousand Dances by the wrestlers, though.
Yes.
He was playing the piano for some reason.
Yep.
So Casey is with Judy in the stairwell discussing the missing money. She concludes, Casey concludes that it was stolen. Connie rolls up, ready to explain what happened, but Casey cuts her off mid-sentence and says that she was robbed by a grade six, or sixth grade for Americans, thief.
Can I talk about the acting skills of whoever's playing Judy?
So yes, please.
Casey's talking with Judy. So Casey says, yeah, I speculate that the money was stolen. And Judy says, stolen? Who could have done it? So, like, oh, no. We have to go through a whole... Fortunately, this actor, actress got better as the episode went on. But this was not a good start.
It's like Airplane. It's like a hospital. And what is it? It's a place where patients are. It's very much similar.
Yeah, I think her and Martin were up for the Juno this year for the best actor.
Gemini.
Oh, Gemini. Yeah, Juno's musical. That's right.
So Connie loses it and says that it wasn't her, and she runs off. Judy says, "Phew, what was that all about?" Okay. Gemini for you, Judy. Phew. In class, Casey and Connie are reading the play aloud. Connie says, "You must prepare your bosom for the knife," which I call instantly bullshit because all the kids would laugh in the class because the word bosom was said. But the kids don't say anything, which is, you know, bullshit. And so reading from Merchant of Venice, we cue military style drum beat. Brum, bum, bum, brum, bum, bum, boom.
That's us, jazzy military.
Yeah, yeah. No, so you don't play.
I know, marching along to. That was Bon Jovi, in case you were wondering, Ted.
The union's on strike. Yeah, thanks. I know Bon Jovi. Come on. Casey follows Connie out of the school and accuses her while she's chasing her of stealing the money. Pete interrupts and says, Connie doesn't have to prove she's innocent because people are presumed innocent until proven guilty. It's like, oh, the fuck, Pete? Like, why do you have to insert yourself in this stuff?
Go look at your pocket watch.
Yeah, you little fucking nerd.
Your fob.
They're like, I wish the pirates had killed you, Pete.
Degrassi would be much better off.
Connie dares her to say, take me to court, and gives our Judy an idea for a trial, and she appoints herself judge. And then Pete's like, I can be a lawyer, and you're like, oh, I don't know where this episode's going.
Yeah, so what's going to happen, everybody, is they're actually going to try to do a legitimate, like, court thing. The part I want to know is, like, if it's children playing court, then that's cool, but everybody's acting like there are real life stakes to this court. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they're going to have court. It's great.
Can you, like, can you remember having this much time on your hands? Yes. Like a child.
I mean, it is impressive, the commitment, right? Like, ultimately they're going to get, you know, 15 kids into that courtroom with numerous kids playing their parts and, like, legitimately working and preparing. And I'm like, this should have been your school project. Like,
sorry.
Yeah.
Like, you're working harder for fun than you are at school. So
that reminds me of when I was in university. God, I knew he had to do a project, a presentation in front of, you know, the profs and all that stuff. But he spent way more time making a presentation about how our instructor looked like Skeletor. And back in the day when there was, like, to have videos and stuff was really technical. This was like 2000 around then. And it was an amazing presentation. And he spent so much time on it. It's like, you probably should have spent your time doing this instead of, you know,
the gag
on your project. Yeah. So we're at the public library, and Pete takes down a huge book that says law. The show comes.
Yeah, he's like, he's got his finger going across all the books. It's like Encyclopedia Britannica. He's like, blah, blah, blah. And right at the end, there's this big book that says law. And it's so obvious that you didn't need to do that to come to this book.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Opens to a random page and just puts his finger on it. Like, that's probably nothing.
This will teach me how to law.
Pete says they need to build a case on facts. And Pete grills Connie about the details of the case. And he says, Casey's not going for a pound of flesh. And Connie says, yeah, just $5.
That's from the Merchant of Venice, by the way. Pound of flesh thing.
Well, I'm glad that this group of adults that went over our heads, I'm sure that the children in the classroom totally caught on. Yeah, so
just like, oh, Merchant of Venice, baby. So Casey's in the stairwell hitting up Martin to be a character witness. Casey explains that he needs to tell the court what Connie is like. so they can prove she's guilty. and he explains all this to her, and a very profound Martin just says, oh. Casey gives questions and answers for him to memorize at the case.
It's great.
And memorize does not mean bring the sheet, spoiler alert, to the witness stand.
And read off of it. Yeah.
But he's going
And you can't read.
So Liz and Connie are playing chess at home, and Connie's making silly mistakes and not focus on the game. She's not into it because she's got court on her mind. Connie figures if she loses tomorrow, everyone will think she's a thief, which she's not, by the way.
And I love how Liz, and I'm assuming anybody who this kid talks to, are just like, just going along with it. Like, Connie's like, I'm going to court. If I was the older sibling, I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, court? Like, that sounds like a, so you kids are playing a stupid game, right? But but Connie's like, I'm distracted from chess because I'm worried about court. And Liz just like, yeah, you should be worried. Like, child court. It's a big deal. What if they think you're a thief? Ugh, worst thing you can be.
Liz is like, I gotta go smoke cigarettes with my boyfriend tonight. <You know? laughs> This does not matter. So we're in the courtroom, a.k.a. the hideout, and Judy bangs the gavel. She's the
Where
judge.
Where are they? There's like a skeleton of a boat on the wall. There's like barrels.
Oh, is this
shit?
Left over from the confusing thing that the haunted house?
No, they are in a garage, because at first I was like, these kids have a clubhouse, but they're not in the clubhouse. They appear to be in a garage somewhere.
Is it a garage? Oh. It looked like a back room of a school or something like that. Like, it was bizarre.
Maybe that's the room that Liz smokes with her boyfriend in, and she's like, yeah, we can get you in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. May I feel you up, Your Honor? What the hell?
It's like, you just have to get out in an hour, because then it's tuggy time. So
so Judy bangs gavel, which is like a rubber mallet from a garage, I guess. And for everyone, take their places.
And she's wearing that fucking wig, that judge wig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I was trying to figure out what it was. Like, is it toilet paper rolled over? Like, I just couldn't figure out what it was. Because it's not a proper wig, of course. Not that you can find a quote-unquote proper judge's wig, but...
So, up till this point, and I mean, before I make this statement, I'll say, like, I actually appreciated everything that's going to happen here. But I was like, okay, like, this show, I get it's a children's show, but it's supposed to be, like, tackling issues, right? Like, we've talked about, like, parents in jail and telling, you know, bullies and, you know, whatever, like, kids moving away and all this shit. In this one, it's just the children play fake court and like, in a humorous way. Like, so it's all full of, like, you know, kids trying to be serious about court, but then, you know, they're kids, so they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And it's, you know, it's all kind of just bullshit. And it's a weird, to me, this is where it gets a little odd, because I'm like, Degrassi typically doesn't go with the goofy route, at least for long periods of time, especially in their A story. So anyways, just needed to get that off my chest, everyone.
Thank you.
This isn't what Degrassi's all about. Anyways, yeah.
Ellen gets really vigilant and militant, and everybody's like, oh, but you say thing now, because he really feels about this.
I'm watching the scene at home, just like progressively getting like more agitated, slowly standing out of my chair. And then the show ends, and I'm like, everyone in the house is looking at me, and I'm like, what the fuck was that? I need to go for a walk.
Yeah. You're sweating so much.
Yeah.
So the judge reads out the charges, and Connie pleads not guilty. And shout out to Pete's rolled up sleeves, like a real, real Southern lawyer. Uh-huh. Love it. The judge says everyone has to tell the truth, and everyone has to listen to, well, I said him, but it was her. Sorry.
I wrote as the same thing. As
a leftover thing.
Yeah.
The prosecution is called, which Pete, of course, has an issue with right away. but why are they called first? And the judge says, that's the way it goes.
And it's funny because that is the way it goes. So it's like, Pete, maybe if you hadn't opened the giant law book and skipped to the middle, you would have found that part. But nope.
Connie's called to the stand for questioning from Casey. And Connie says that she didn't steal anything. And then Martin is called to the stand, bringing his crumpled up paper, this crumpled up cheat sheet. Martin says he's known Connie since grade two. She's pretty normal, a good chess player, and eats a lot of red licorice, which the courtroom laughs.
I just love that, like, Martin is so fucking dumb.
Just like, oh, yeah.
Like, he's the whole point of him going up is supposed to be to make her look like a shitty person, and then he forgets because he's a dope, right? It's like, Martin, what do you think? Well, she likes licorice. It's like, Casey has to be like, talk about what we discussed. She's a piece of shit. Like, come on. Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. Sidebar, are any of you black licorice fans?
No.
Nope. No.
Terrible.
Yes.
Are you? Barry.
Oh, yeah. I'm a black licorice guy. Yeah, I prefer it to
red. It's like so bad.
Really?
Like Zambuca.
It's like Zambuca.
The worst is when they put black licorice jelly beans in. It's like, right? Like, they might as well mix in, like, little turds with the jelly beans and be like, oh, you know, don't pick the wrong one because, the worst.
Could disagree more. Big fan.
So what's your favorite type of black licorice? Like ropey licorice or, like, goodies?
Jujube ones, yeah.
Jujube ones. Oh, my God.
Do you like this serious, like European licorice? Like, the salty, crazy licorice?
I've never had that.
Really? I'll have to send you some.
All right.
Ted mentioned goodies, and, like, I seriously almost vomited all over my desk. Like, oh, let's put black licorice in, like, a disgusting candy thing, and then we'll put little, like, you know, multicolored candies sprinkled onto it to make it look like something.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, like, this will make it appealing. It doesn't. It's gross. It's the worst.
It might have been grade six, actually, you know, relative to the show, but 1 year before it was our school picture day, and they had it right after recess, which made a lot of sense for a bunch of kids that are going to be getting their faces messed up. But anyway, I ate a bunch of black licorice, and when I'm small, it looks like all my teeth are rotting out. and they took the picture, and that's the one they went with. I got this picture, nice. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, when I was in grade 12, I took, like, my normal school photo, and then they were like, we're going to take another photo that's going to go in your bus pass. So I, like, wet my hair and slicked it back and made a gangster, like, angry look in my photo. And then that's the one that they ended up putting in the yearbook. So.
Nice.
Yeah. We need to see that photo. Post it on our Instagram.
I'll try to find it. Yeah. Greaser Allen, everybody. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, we should all post our best picture of our, like, our school photos on Instagram.
Well, keep an eye out. Narbos and Broomheads podcast on Instagram, everybody. Maybe we'll give you a treat down the road. Yeah.
I don't know if they're all ready for my blue silk shirt in grade 9. Oh, look at that. So glittery.
My homemade neon skateboarder dress that my mom made me. Just neon skateboarders all over it.
Did your mom throw up like a hang loose on and go, radical, Courtney?
No.
I remember.
When you said skateboarder dress, I was just like, oh, a cute skater dress.
Oh, yeah. No, I realized it sounded way cooler than it is. It's literally fabric from Fabric Land that has fucking skateboarders all over it.
I remember, like, a brand of shirts that my mom would have gotten me from probably Byway, where it was like, knockoff Fido Dido looking guys, and it said, like, bad dudes like that on it.
Or, like, yeah, the fake Adidas pants with the two stripes.
The two stripes, or the four stripes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
And to be crossed out with pirates written down the side.
So, back to the trial. Casey prompts Martin to inform the court of what else. Martin starts reading the paper and says, like, it is actually very funny because he's reading it like like a kid reads something, very like starts and stops. She makes a lot of excuses. Like when she spilled that chocolate milk on me in the cafeteria, she said it wasn't her fault because the wind blew it over, though there are no windows in the cafeteria. Casey jumps on it and says, that doesn't make her a very honest person, now does it? Martin guesses it doesn't.
It's like, you know what? She is a lying piece of shit. You're right.
Martin probably still doesn't realize that the wind didn't blow it over.
He's just realizing it now. It's like, wait a second. was she lying to me?
I found it interesting that they didn't actually correct that part of it. You know, like nobody ever said, hey, he's reading off a piece of paper. You're not allowed to do that. You have to tell the truth or something like that. Like nobody just like, fine. The judge is fine with it. Everybody's fine with it. It's cool that he was coached.
Yeah.
Well, I was just surprised because it seems like they were trying to be fairly educational about sort of how it goes. Right. So I was surprised that it didn't get pointed out at all.
Well, and again, like
acceptable in court.
I feel like, you know, there it's comedic, right? That he's reading these notes because he can't remember. And like, clearly he's going with something that's scripted, and I think it's supposed to be funny, which again to me is like, I get a little bit of comic relief in Degrassi, but this is, I don't know. It's not a comedy show, everybody. It's serious. Like people get AIDS in this show. Like, come on.
They're not even from Bear Roberts.
Hey-o. I think it's kind of when like a boxer is like pretending to fight a little kid and then they like touch their chin and they fall down. It's like, oh, you beat me. I think they're doing that with Martin. So Pete is up for cross-examination. He asked Martin who brought home his bike from the railroad tracks and babysat his sister for free when they went to a baseball game. So he starts to mad dog him. He gets up in his face and he says, after all that, you think she is a thief? And he says, I don't know. I don't think so.
like Johnny Cochran there, the way
he
very much so. Casey objects to this. Judge bangs the gavel and says, opinions don't count after Casey and Pete get into heated arguments about all this. One more witness is called by Casey. That's in a bag. Oh, what could it be? It's a tape recorder with a cassette recording of Miss Cordelia Hines from 82.5 Degrassi Street.
I'm assuming this is the same Mrs. Hines that was referenced in the last episode as one of Pete's car wash customers. So,
the tennis player?
Yes.
Oh, no, that was Mrs. Dion.
Oh, wait, Dion. Oh, yeah. Fuck it. Sorry. Got my fake Degrassi adults wrong. So
stupid, Alan.
So the tape says she hasn't received the paper in over a week. So there's a recording of her. And all you can expect from Connie is for her to collect. Pete objects because there shouldn't be a machine instead of a real person witness, because you can't cross-examine a tape recorder, which, you know, Pete, not true. The judge agrees because Miss Hines is also a crank, and judge recalls trying to pick her dandelions, which, like, I guess she was pissed about. The judge puts Casey in her place and motions her to sit down. Pete requests that Casey go to the witness stand. Oh, because she's a lawyer. She says she can't and whispers something to the judge. The judge calls a 5-minute recess. I vote. Let's go around the circle. I vote that she had to go twosies. what do you all think? Because she ends up in the bat. She ends up in the can. So I don't know. What did you all think?
I think that Ann Flo visited for the first time.
That is so bad. Barry told me that on a separate thread. He's like, yeah. Do you think that's what happened? I was like, I didn't think it, but could have been.
I figure everything happened all at once. That's my vote.
Oh, that's such a that's terrible. Yeah. It's like not for you, just like, oh, Madge. What do you ladies think?
I think she needed to take a nap.
She needed to take a nap in the bathroom and flush the toilet to cover up her snoring.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. It's not easy.
Overflushing.
Arlo's on the toilet right now.
I think she went to flush evidence down the toilet.
Oh, there you go. You're trying to flush the tape recorder.
I got one more. She went to do a bump.
Ah, Mary.
She needs that energy.
Yeah,
she needs energy for a cross contamination.
Yeah. So we got Pete and Connie chatting. She is worried about the outcome of the trial, and Casey's still in the toilet. And the judge is talking to her through the door, which I thought it was a I thought it was a boy, and I was like, "Oh, that's really weird."
Yeah, that's but what I then, thought. Of.
When I found out it was female, I was like, oh, "Okay, it's my own heteronormative."
I thought that at first too, but then I also thought, and I've again told this on the podcast before. One of my pet peeves: don't talk to me when I'm in the bathroom stall. Like, I don't want to have a conversation while I'm doing stuff. So, just saying. And don't, and I've also told this story before. Also, when you're talking to me and I'm in the bathroom stall, don't try to look through the crack of the bathroom stall to make eye contact with me while I'm going, please.
Hello, Alan. I see you with my one eye.
Yeah. No, don't like it.
So, I got to, not to speak for all men, but I'd say guys are like, it's a zone of silence in the washroom. Women, not so much.
Tell the women on this podcast how they work, Ted.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I stopped there because I really don't know. I've never been in a woman's washroom. Well, not unless I really need to go. No.
Well, one thing about the women's washroom is that we use the handicap one to poop in.
Oh.
Is that what, do men do that too?
What?
If you need to spread out your legs, I guess.
Like, what? Like, yeah, what's happening here?
I don't know. It's just usually it's like either a separate washroom altogether, or there's a sink in it and a mirror in it, and you get to lock the door and look in the mirror and wash your hands in private.
Arlo, is this true or is this a Courtney thing?
Or is this just me?
I would say if there's like a. That doesn't happen very often, though. Like, where there's, like, a completely separate washroom that's just a single stall. But I would say that that's true when that exists. When you either have to go into the main part of the bathroom with the masses or into a separate stall, you would choose a separate stall. The private one.
But only to take a dump.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
What do you mean, stalls aren't private? The hell?
No. Oh, God. Edit this all out.
Nope.
Start from the beginning.
Can our female listeners out there please write us narblesandbroomheads@gmail.com or comment on this podcast. Tell me how you take a shit and how it works in public public washrooms, please, because I want to know. That's what I'm going to do right after this podcast. I'm going to go upstairs and ask my wife, hey, how do you take a shit? When you're out in public, how does it work? So I'll learn.
Report back.
We call it pillow talk in this house. Yeah.
Also tricked everybody because women don't poop. All right.
Exactly.
Moving on.
Exactly.
Yep.
So Casey is having her doubts about the trial and she thinks she may want to drop the charges, but the judge shuts it down and says, too late. Can't stop the wheels of justice.
Which is
like, okay,
but. Which is not true. Like,
no, you totally can.
Nope. Once you start a trial, no stopping.
Back to the trial. Casey is on the stand, and Pete asks how many erasers she lost last year. She says, hard to say. Then he asks her about being in charge of the Christmas cards this year and how many people got them in February.
Ooh.
She admits that she forgot to mail a few. He asks if she remembered to lock the equipment room for the after school today. She forgot, but Connie locked it up.
Ooh.
Casey admits She may have lost or dropped or forgotten where she put the $5. The gallery oohs and ahs. Pete rests his case, and he's so very happy.
And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that only the prosecution rests their case. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Like, Pete's the defense. He does not need to rest his case. So, just saying.
No.
Why do they keep giving her all these tasks if she fucks them all up?
She is bad at her job.
That's probably why Pete has such a hard on for her, because he, of course, wants to be in charge of everything, but Casey keeps doing it and fucking it up. I'm sure that Pete totally hates that, even though Pete's also a fuck up. So,
yeah,
all these 11-year-olds, little fuck ups, all of them.
That's right.
So we have the verdict. It's not Connie's fault, and Casey must have lost it. Case dismissed. Then we hear horns like burr, 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 or whatever. I can't remember what it was, but they played horns. I just noted that they played horns, but I didn't actually notate what the horns were. So I was like, horns. Oh, I don't know.
Bad hosting.
Terrible host. So Casey runs off, and Connie catches up with her, trying to explain what happened. Casey wants to be left alone and storms off. And here comes Moose, who was probably waiting like a couple of feet out of frame to tell her, says the strike is over. So, now Connie can get the money to make a cake. Cut to Connie delivering post-strike papers and collecting. She goes to the store, and we have a carrot making montage.
I'm doing. What are you doing tonight? Carrot caking, everyone.
Yeah. Carrot caking. Actually, carrot caking still works.
Yeah. By the way, last appearance of Moose, we hardly knew ye. All you know, yada yada.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh my God, no. We do have a ripoff, though. I do know the tune of this song because it's a ripoff of Everyone Loves Marineland. Because, like, I was like, what the, huh? I know that song. I know that song.
Everyone loves Marineland.
Everyone loves carrot cake. Yeah, it was weird.
If you like to torture dolphins and whales.
Oh, I know, it's so bad. Yeah.
That was a good jingle, though. Let's be honest.
It's true.
Everyone loves Marineland.
I remember when I never heard that song, and then when I was like 10, I visited Toronto for the first time and heard that jingle all the time, and that's one of the only things I remembered for years about Toronto. Like, friends, you miss a great big kiss. Get in the water and take a piss at Marineland. Sorry.
We got that in commercials in Newfoundland about Marineland, and we're like, what is this magical place? And Barry, Detroit News, which we've talked about previously.
Oh, we got that too. We got the Detroit stations in Winnipeg too.
I know more about Detroit.
It takes two, baby.
Did you guys
take two TV too?
Did you guys get the Sam Bernstein commercials?
Laughs is Sam Bernstein. Lee Schreiber.
Amazing. Yep.
With news reporter Carmen Harlan. Loved it.
Diana Lewis.
Yeah.
To all Detroit listeners, I'm sure they're loving these references.
Like, yeah, go Red Wings. Whoa, yeah. Motor City, bitch. Yeah. So.
We're huge in Detroit.
We are.
Write in to narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com.
Yeah, give
if
us
you're
some,
a Detroit listener.
Give us some love, or Motor City, if you're not if you're not getting robbed or, you know, having your house repossessed, write us. Let us know. Yeah,
I remember as a kid watching the news, like, what the hell is going on at this place?
The world is crazy.
Uh-huh.
Devil's Night, what the heck?
Yes.
Like, houses being burned now?
I feel like...
I did Devil's Night. Just kidding. I'm so scared.
I feel like they showed us stuff in Detroit to make us appreciate Winnipeg a little more. We're like, all right, it's not that bad here. It's fine.
Except you had Jeffrey Epstein.
What?
Just kidding.
What?
Oh my God, do you know what I just got mixed up?
You mean who's Phil Nygaard, right?
Yeah. I got the cancer.
What happened? What?
Sorry, I got my old white pedophiles mixed up.
Who did you reference? Not Epstein, but who?
What's his name, Arlo? Nygaard?
Phil Nygaard. Ran like a clothing empire out of Winnipeg, but you know, all that Epstein shit or Harvey Weinstein or all that just applied to him. Same thing. Yeah. It's just the Winnipeg version of it, everybody. Every like large crime out there, there's a Winnipeg version of it. Just know. Yeah.
Was that Billy? There you go. Thanks, bud. You make everything better. So, Connie proudly brings the cake to Casey's house. Casey's all about it. Yada, yada. We're great. Connie comes clean and tells her the real situation of what happened, which could have been resolved like 3 minutes in. But, you know, they got a show, as one Arlo would say. Thank you. And she says that she dropped the money. Things escalate. Casey says that Connie's a thief. Cake to the face.
It's like wrestling, everybody. If there is a conflict and there is a cake in the vicinity, someone is getting their cake or their face in the cake. So,
yes.
And that's what happened here.
Probably 5 to 6 seconds after slamming the cake in Connie's face, one child to another, Casey then says, "Wait. You must have worked real hard on that cake."
And then she says, "Do you think you can make another one?"
Bitch.
And I was like, bitch.
Like.
And the best part is the entire conversation, Connie's standing there with fucking icing all over her face. Like, I'd love it if they had a montage of the two of them baking the cake and she's still got the icing on her face.
Yeah. You're dripping in the new cake. Stop it. So Connie then asks, with a cake full of face full of cake, not a cake full of face, asks if this means she's sorry. And they ask each other's forgiveness. They kneel down to the smashed cake. And Connie says, "The quality of forgiveness, right?" As they put the cake back on the platter, which I don't guarantee is not the actual cake we'll see in a couple of scenes ahead.
I'd also like to say,
kid be kid.
And I am not too proud to admit this. If there were parts of that cake that didn't hit the floor and I knew it, I would still eat some of it.
That's right, yeah. It's all good.
Rocks in your mouth.
Yep. Like, you're not going to let that cake go to all to waste, right? Like, there's parts of that that are still good.
Alan's here to save the day.
Though that being said, it is carrot cake, which belongs in the garbage, so.
Oh, no.
With the black licorice?
Yes.
Quick vote for carrot cake. Ted says yay. Alan says nay. What say you?
I will qualify that. Carrot cake with no fucking nuts or anything in it is fine. Fine. With like the whatchamacallit icing, the cream cheese icing or whatever, right? Great.
Yeah,
But as soon as you put nuts in it, anything, like, you may as well put my nuts in it because I'm not fucking eating it. Disgusting.
You're just standing there.
A nutty carrot cake, but I have difficulty with raisins in a carrot cake.
Oh, come on. Yeah, no, that's fine.
And they get all plump and moist, like a tick ready to pop.
Fuck. Gross.
Barry, what say you about carrot cake?
I'm gonna take it or leave it. I mean, I don't dislike it, and it's not one of my favorite cakes.
I have a gun to your head. Eat the cake.
Absolutely. Especially cream cheese frosting. I feel like it's just a vehicle to get the cream cheese frosting into my mouth.
Yeah.
It's
fair.
It's like, I don't know, carrot cake is like, I made you a cake, but it's carrot cake. Like, Why don't Psych. You, like, yeah, like I could make you a really good thing, but I'm going to do less of it because why? Because I hate you. Like who out there is like, oh no, carrot cake is delightful and it's my favorite. That person doesn't exist.
Some people it is their favorite.
Absolutely yeah, not. It really is. Those people, you know, they're either dead or they're 90. Like that generation is gone. We've evolved past carrot cake. Get the fuck out of here.
Costco carrot cake's a bomb.
Ugh. Disgusting.
I'm seriously inspired to make one tomorrow. I need something. I seriously might. Like, yeah. No, for sure. I will report on next time.
Post a photo on Sewa3 on the Instagram machine.
If you make it's it carrot than cake and carrot, call me, eat some.
Carrots and jello. Like, I think we talked about that dessert.
Oh, yeah, but that's sacrilegious. That's like... You know, man, it's like
love me to eat that all the time.
Ugh.
That's like bumping your knee is better than being burned alive. It's like, come on now. Like the two don't equate. Rig. Come on.
I okay. It was a thing though.
Oh, actually, I follow vintage recipes on Instagram, and it's like something suspended in Jello, and they're like, look how beautiful this is.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, it's so terrible. Oh,
it's worse. It's so bad.
It's our front to God. Like this
the
is
hell
so
came
bad.
Up with that idea.
Tuna loaf. Oh, delish.
Well, when they shape it in the shape of a fish.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. So we cut to Mrs. G's party with a new, probably, question mark, cake that says, have a beautiful, with two L's, baby X, because the kids can't spell, because the Y is like kind of an X as well. We see the credits roll. Pete says, the cake is great. Like, he's really marking out about this freaking cake. It's like, okay, Pete, like... Cool your jets, man. Connie and Casey talk about it going both ways. The quality of mercy, the guy who gives, the guy who takes. And I was like, okay, the episode's over. I don't want to try to dig into what even that means. Like, I'm done taking notes. Whatever. And then Pete says, you probably won't believe me, but there's a hunk of carrot in my cake. And then Casey laughs it off and says, it's a carrot cake, you bitch. And then that's it. That's the end. She doesn't say last word. But the way she said it was very much, yeah, bitch. intonation, let's say. And that's it. That's the end. Ooh. What do you think about this? Oh, that pregnant lady is eating like the cake children made. You know my thoughts on that. Terrible. Terrible.
I don't even know. I don't what were we trying to do with this episode? I still don't know. Like if they were like, okay, we just want to fill some time and do a little bit of comedy, fine. If that was your goal, you did it. I was amused. That's great. But I'm there's still a big part of me that's like, what was your goal with this episode?
I think this was supposed to be sort of an educational thing about how court works so that maybe schools could, you know, show a jury unit that they were having on court or something like that. You know that I love this show. I've been charmed by this show. I've loved many of the episodes. I hated this episode. I hated the trope over and over and over again of, but just let me explain. No, no time to explain. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just such, like, it's such a tired old trope of, like, problems yeah. that could be solved in a second if somebody just said, no, listen to me. This is what's going on. And in this episode, it was just over and over again for half an hour. And I fucking hated it.
Wow.
Sorry.
So what's her name? Fucking Marcel Dion's wife, Michelle Dion. Eat shit for Marlo.
Sorry. I thought it was over. This was overwritten too. It had all of these references to the Merchant of Venice. Like, unless you have intimate knowledge of that play, which no child who's watching this has. You know, it's just it. I hated it. I hated this episode. Sorry. That's how I feel.
Like, Courtney, is that you? Are we talking about Degrassi the Next Gen?
Right? I know.
Already filled.
Yeah. Courtney, did you love this episode?
No. Yes. It was okay.
I thought it's filler crap. It was fine, I guess. But I am with Arlo in terms of serving a purpose. It served no fucking purpose.
Well, and I didn't find, you know, I wasn't pulling for any of the kids either. Like, all of the kids were, like, kind of little dicks in this episode, too. You know, Casey was, like, a little fucking dick, and Connie was a little fucking dick. And, like,
I was trying
Peach
to figure out the timeline.
Okay, but he's annoying. You know, like, I just, there's no one to pull for in this episode either. They were all just dicks.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out the timeline. Like I said, so Wednesday she had to come up with the money. She didn't have it because the strike happened. So then it goes to school the next day without the money. Then there's a court case. So I guess that's Friday. And then after the court case, the strike is over. So I guess it was a very short strike, which I guess happened. Uh-huh. And when was the party? Like, why did they have to have the money by Wednesday if the party wasn't until the next week? Like,
well, they needed time to buy the things, Barry.
You're going to the store. It's on the street. That's where you buy everything. So and the other thing is, all that cake and greens cost a lot more than $5, and she should have just kicked in the $5.
Yes.
Then make greens for two cakes.
Yeah. Like, she had to do a lot of fucking work, even without paying for the ingredients. The labor? Come on. Yeah. Even child labor. That's, like, worth more than $5 there.
Child labor is free.
Yeah.
But I was entertained.
If
like
you have your own children.
I was entertained. It probably wasn't the greatest episode in the history of the Kids of the Grassy Street, but I was entertained by it. I didn't loathe it.
Someone was.
Wow.
hey.
But to your point, though, like I said, this could have been resolved in the first 3 minutes of the show by just letting her finish a sentence. And that drives me when that happens. And it happens, like you said, it is a trope in many a 80s sitcom. So.
I mean, I will say this. If you didn't like this episode and you think that this is a low point for Kids of Degrassi Street, we are going to the opposite end next week.
Oh,
I've already watched this episode. I can't wait to watch it again. Griff makes a date. Fucking, I don't even know what his name is in the show, but like, it's Mike Nelson, everybody. He's in the episode. They repeatedly say like banned words over the course of the episode. It's fucking incredible. Like,
I haven't seen the episode, but I have seen the scene you're referencing. So.
There's not just one scene. There are multiple scenes. It's amazing. Like, we're going to have to, like, words, like, I can't say the words that they're going to say on the podcast. We're going to have to find something else, but they're going to say a lot of them. Mike Nelson's going to say a lot of them. It's unbelievable, everybody. Unbelievable coming up in a week's time. So, just saying.
Great. Can't wait.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping that, I mean, again, I've been loving this show. I've been loving the run of the show entirely. So, I mean, you can't win them all. This one, for me, was a dud, and I fully expect a turnaround in the coming episodes.
Guaranteed turnaround. Guaranteed.
Well, Arlo, you're out of order. And
that's fair.
Well, I guess we hope you've had a fine time, Arlo. Not included, I guess. But yeah, so let's see. Who have been the jurors and legalese people of this podcast? Let's go for the hater. Let's go. Saskatchewan, who was that over there?
The rural juror. you can follow me on Instagram at ARLOESCOTT. And let's go over to Toronto.
The big city jurors? I don't know.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, I'm not rural. Like, I am.
Come on. Let's be honest.
Alan's a big city lawyer.
Yeah.
And he's putting his thumbs underneath his suspenders.
Yep.
He's like, I'm a big city lawyer. Also, boner, boner, boner. You know, it's just like, it's kind of his content.
Uh-huh. I fart in the courtroom and then go, odor, odor in the court. That's what I do, everybody. Anyways, hi, everybody. Alan, Slip with Five Eyes. If you want to follow the podcast, it's Narbos and Broomheads Podcast on Instagram. We have a Facebook group. Go find us there. And if you want to write us, and again, tell us, how do you take a dump? And you know what? Not just ladies. This is open to everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't want to limit it on this podcast. So if you want to write us, narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com, tell us about how shits happen in public for all genders, and we will share it on a future episode. And of course, with that in mind, go give us a 5-star rating on all the podcast apps. That'd be great. Go out to Courtney.
Hello. I'm here.
Hi, Courtney.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. You can find me on Instagram at Courtney.1293, if you dare. That's all.
All right.
You want to throw out, you want to throw out to anybody else?
Do I?
Not me, but the other Newfoundland person.
But you guys are the same person.
He died.
Well, the other person is me as well.
Oh. The one that you threatened to be here?
Hey, what did I say? Saying that out loud.
Anyway, it's me, Judge Barry T. Stone. I'll be on the X at Barry R. Flynn.
Yeah, and I'm in Teddy Boy. You're a special boy and judge, jury, and executioner. No, not really. I'll just give you hugs. Only if you want them. Hug, hug, hug. Love, love, love. All right. What?
You should have made way more references to Judge Judy. Just saying.
Yeah, you want to do one now?
Well, I just did.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Well, we're just saying your name. It's not really a reference. It's like... And we hope you've enjoyed the show. We've certainly... guess enjoyed the show besides Arlo, but you know, she enjoyed just the presence of it. All right, all the world's a stage, y'all. And yeah, we'll see you next time on the Narbos and Broomheads show.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Baby.
Well, I just said I don't get my love. Would stay up late and dream about Kylan. I would never get girls out of my house.
Maybe I would.
I would walk around the cafe just to get to call my dreams. Everyone thinks I'm so good. I went crazy at the school. Yeah.